we have on the air, on the line, my very good friend, Dr. Duke Pesta. How are you doing, Dr. Duke?
Hey, Hal. How are you today?
Good, and you're coming in loud and clear all the way from beautiful Wisconsin. We have a young homeschool lady from a group that I met, the man who runs it, and it's her first time on the air, and she's going to interview me about Camp Constitution afterwards, I'm hoping. So say hello to her, Isabel Adams.
Isabel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thank you. No. You're going to have a good, fun interview about Camp Constitution. It's a great organization.
Well, anyway, Dr. Duke has been a guest instructor at our camp last year. I know you have a ridiculously busy schedule, which is good because it's a good kind of busy. You are, I would say, one of the nation's, if not the top nation's, critic on Common Core and also an expert on higher education. But it's not just criticizing, it's also a solutions. So tell us a little bit about you and the Freedom Project.
Well, I am primarily a professor of English. I've been for 25 years. I'm a unique animal in that I am both a conservative and a Christian in a university setting, which has made for all sorts of interesting legal battles over the year. But I am an English professor, tenured at the University of Wisconsin. I am also the director of Freedom Project Academy and Media. And Freedom Project is basically a complete online homeschool option for moms and dads, where we bring live teachers, not just recorded lessons, into your home. So kids can stay at home, and we can help you homeschool them, or we can school them from your home as a way of avoiding the politics, the ideology, the craziness, and the progressive bullying that takes place in the public schools. And our media side really tries to promote and realign culture. We do a lot of programming for educational videos, and I'm the host of the Dr. Duke Show, which is a weekly podcast. It's a video podcast, or you can download it as a podcast. It's the only show of its kind in the country. We spend an hour each week looking at the most prominent education stories. And it's really actually quite an interesting thing. You would think that that sounds boring, but when you think about all of the transgenderism, you think about all of the, again, progressive bullying, you think about all the ways that universities and public schools thwart the Constitution and undermine our kids' Second Amendment rights and First Amendment rights while going after the Second Amendment, it really is a lively show. And the Dr. Duke Show can be found simply by entering the Dr. Duke Show into your search finder, or just going to wherever podcasts are found. And it's free. It's a free download. So check it out.
By the way, your colleague, Katie Petrick, she is a woman that more ladies need to know, especially when she said she doesn't spend more than $20 in a wardrobe, and she looks very presentable. So.
Yeah, she's great. She shows you that the schools, even the colleges and the universities, can't screw up every kid. She was a former student of mine in a Shakespeare class, and she took multiple courses with me because she loved the worldview, which was not overtly progressive. And so as soon as she graduated, I hired her for Freedom Project, and now she's my co-host on the Dr. Duke Show. And she's very educated, too. She has an undergraduate degree in political science, and she has a master's degree in education. So we make a pretty good team covering the educational issues of the day.
Doctor, one of your many presentations I was either watched on YouTube or was there listening to it, you gave a test to your new students, and it made some national attention at one point. Can you just review that a little bit? I think not only is it humorous, but it's also tragic.
Yeah, you know, I got sick and tired of the trigger warning culture, got sick and tired of the cultural ignorance of my kids, too. So for about 12 years, I taught at 7 different universities over my career. Over 5 of the 7, for about a 12-year period, first day of class, I handed out what I called cultural competency quizzes. Before I even passed out the syllabus or wrote my name on the board, I asked them 20 questions about basic tenets of American history and Western culture. And it was really eye-opening how ignorant our kids are. These are college-level kids.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the first thing. Two most shocking statistics, that something like almost 90% of kids, over 90% of kids, actually preferred socialism to capitalism. And when I asked them to define socialism in one word, I gave them on this test, about the vast majority of them, like 92%, described socialism as fairness. Mm-hmm. That's all they knew about it.
Fairness.
And when I asked them to talk about socialism, they knew nothing about the history of socialism. They didn't know the hundreds of millions dead in the wake of socialism. They didn't. All they had been taught in their middle schools and their high schools and their universities, that socialism was fair and that capitalism was greedy.
Interesting. And I guess they could have put in for an answer Bernie Sanders. That may have. Would you have given them credit if they put in Bernie Sanders?
I would. At this point, I'd just be happy if they could spell Sanders correctly.
I know there's a lot of folks that do these men on the street or woman on the street interviews, and they ask, who's the vice president of the United States? Or what's the last book you read? And they'd be thinking, gee, I haven't read a book since I left high school, and that was 50 years ago. And it's not just the youngsters, you know, of Isabel's age. It's people my age as well. Yes, I know that our dear friend Dr. Sam Blumenfeld and Charlotte Isabet, another friend of ours, did a lot of work on the deliberately dumbing down of America. And it's also the bumming down of America, too.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, Sam was way ahead of his time with this. People like Sam and Charlotte recognized in the 70s and the 60s even that what was happening was, as education at every level, starting at the universities, in the 60s it was primarily the universities, that what was start we were starting to see was a ideological takeover of the classroom, whereby actual knowledge was subordinated to what we would now today call social justice education. Well, thanks to the rise of federal programs like No Child Left Behind and Common Core, you now have what's happening in the public schools from kindergarten through high school. What's happening there is what happened in the universities in the 1960s, which means they've become more radical. The faculty has begun to phase out any voices that aren't radical and progressive. The curriculum has been hijacked by social justice warriors who are teaching politics and ideology, not real skills and abilities that your kids need to survive in life. And as we saw with the universities in the 1960s, now your kids' public school education in elementary, middle, and high school is about a lot of things, but very few of them are actually about educational achievement.
Can you give us a working definition of social justice? Because phrases are used all the time, and some people think, well, it sounds like a good idea. You want to have justice.
Social justice is just the latest fad way of saying socialism. Mm-hmm. It is, whether you call it liberation theology in the churches or you call it by a dozen other names. Social justice is radical left-wing political advocacy. It is collectivist. It is big government. It is anti-capitalist. It promotes a globalist environmentalist agenda, not because they're concerned about the world or the planet, but because that's a good way to allocate resources and to tax carbon and to inhibit first world economies. It is radically atheist. In other words, you think about the major tenets of Marxist dialectic. When Marx finished his Das Kapital in the middle of the 19th century, all the major talking points of Marxist socialism is exactly what you will find in today's social justice, right? All of those things, and the latest iteration of socialism is what we would call social justice.
Now, you mentioned that the Communist Manifesto is the most popular book in colleges today.
Yeah, that book is ascribed and taught more than almost any other book. And it is remarkable because it's taught across all the disciplines, right? Sociologists teach it, economists teach it,
English professors teach it,
history professors teach it, philosophy professors teach it. And the irony of that is it's not any of those things. The book was actually written as an economic treatise. But as far as economics go, clearly Marxist economics has failed. Marxist economics has failed every place they've been tried. In fact, his economic book, Das Kapital, is as big and colossal a failure that of any major figure has ever attempted in any discipline. And yet, the book, for all of its economic failing, has caught the attention of social justice warriors. It's caught the attention of proto-Marxist English professors, historians like Howard Zinn, who want to undo the American freedoms and liberties guaranteed by the Constitution, have gravitated to Das Kapital. So the failed economist has become a hotbed revolutionary. I mean, Saul Alinsky, everything that he stands for, it goes right back to the communist revolution, goes right back to Das Kapital. And so Barack Obama, right, who is his mentor, Bill Ayers,
the
communist playbook.
The unrepentant terrorist, yes.
Exactly, unrepentant terrorist. So this is across the board What we saw happen to the Catholic Church, Hal. I mean, this is a big thing. We look at the Catholic Church today and we see that it's pro-open borders, that it's anti-capitalism, that it's anti-West, that it's anti-liberty.
And by the way, you happen to be a Catholic too, so
I was raised. Catholic. I have a hard time associating with the organization, the institution anymore. I mean, they have so corrupted it. But the what happened in the 60s was the liberation theology movement. And in the 60s, theologically, liberation theology was a fancy way of saying the Marxist takeover of our seminaries. And it should be pointed out, too, that the vast majority of molesting priests were the priests that went to the seminary because they were looking for a social justice education,
mm-hmm.
right? That the church prior to the advent of liberation theology did not have anything like the kind of abuse going on. So in other words, you had a lot of young men in the 60s who entered the church to radicalize it. They
mm-hmm.
entered the
That's
church
right.
not because they believed in its tenets or wanted to live by its principles, but they entered the church to subvert it with Marxist anarchist philosophies. That's the generation of priests that did the most damage in terms of sexual abuse. And it shouldn't be a surprise, right, given what Marxist creed preaches.
Interesting that I do a number of radio shows over the years, and every now and then I'll get this. Someone will call in and say, well, the Constitution was written by Eurocentric males, 240 years ago, and it has no validity today, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd ask him, well, what if it was written by a Eurocentric male in 1848? Would it be valid? No, it wouldn't be valid. I says, well, thank you very much. You've just nullified the Communist Manifesto. And then they get really upset with you and call you names. And we actually have a class over the years at our camp to it's called the 10 Planks of the Communist Manifesto. As we should know what the enemy really is about. And we're not reading it to glorify it. We're reading it to say, hey, Marx said we have to abolish all eternal truths. He said the concept of marriage was a corruption. He wanted to do away with property rights, do away with... he was a big free trader, too, by the way. Isn't that interesting, right? Free trade. I thought libertarians were free traders, you see.
Well, everything you just listed, Hal, think about how far the socialists have won. Now, they haven't gotten rid of free private property, but through all sorts of schemes,
taxations,
they've sure been pretty hard.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. One of the planks is an inheritance tax, and while we can still die in this country, they'll let us die. They haven't outlawed dying yet. I'm sure they seem to see a lot of us die as quick as they can. You got to pay an inheritance tax in many cases, so you really can't say, when I die, I want to give my house to my, I don't want to give it to my son, I want to give it to my neighbor, or what have you. Oh, you can't do that. So you can still die, but when you do inherit things, you're going to pay a tax, and that was given us by Woodrow Wilson, who also gave us the income tax, which is also part of the Communist Manifesto. Isabel, you studied the Communist Manifesto as a homeschooler?
Not extensively, but did go through exactly what socialism is and how it always leads to communism and the effects of that are, yeah.
So, and that was in the Becker program?
It was. Yeah. I actually looked into that on my own just because I wanted to learn more. Because as soon as something grasps my interest in history, I'm all over it. So I just took a look at it afterwards and I'm like, why do people want this again?
Exactly.
It's like killed millions of people and you want it here. No thanks. I'll take my chances somewhere else.
That's right. I'll take freedom. Thank you. What was that? What was that? Obama's hope and change. He said, I'll take the hope, Obama. You can keep the change. So, Duke, you also mentioned that 80% of Christian students that enter the state colleges, they will lose their faith within a very short time.
Yeah, usually there's all different statistics and metrics for this, but generally speaking, somewhere around 8 out of 10, once they go, kids who believe in Christianity and take it seriously go to church when they graduate, after 4 years in a major public university, they have almost completely walked away from that. And some studies have shown that it's going to be 4 or 5 election cycles, 20 years, as many as 20 years, before some of those kids return. And you know what it is? It's life. When they get to the point where they have their own kids, when they're meeting their own mortgage payments and they're paying health care for their employees, then some of those kids come back. But it's a pretty powerful thing.
But 20 years is a long time.
It's a long time. And, you know, if Hillary Clinton, if the last election in 2016 had only been voted on by people 35 or under, I think that Donald Trump only would have won one state.
And we would all be sitting in concentration camps, right?
That's right.
Pretty much.
But you also said that your leftist professor colleagues gloat. I mean, this is like one of the greatest things they can accomplish is to destroy the faith of a young person.
You know, I have had, at every university I've taught at, I've had people look me in the eye and tell me that they just so relish kicking the Christ out of kids. That's
wow.
how one person phrased it. You know, I'm looking forward to kicking the Christ right out of these stupid kids and the contempt. They don't treat these kids. You know, I have actually had professors tell me, you know, that, gosh, another boring class of 32 white bread kids, or they'll get one African American, or they'll get one kid with purple hair and 8,000 tattoos, and they'll teach the class just for that one kid at the expense of everybody else.
We've talked about the problem for the last 20 minutes. Now we're going to talk about solutions, and that's really the most important thing. What can parents and grandparents and big brothers and others, what can they do to reverse this? What do you have to offer there, Dr. Duke?
Now, how should I target that answer in the time we have left? When we talk about universities?
I know you only have 8-9 minutes, but Freedom Project Education.
Okay. For moms and dads who are looking, and we've got a guest in the audience sitting right next to you who can talk about homeschool and the value of homeschool. Look, biblically and in terms of common sense, we as parents are the primary educators of our kids. If we're going to let our kids turn our kids over 7-8 hours a day, 5 days a week to public school educated teachers who have been drilled and drilled and drilled about how Christianity is evil, how faith is a lie, how parental control is garbage, that it belongs to the schools and the state. If we're going to turn these kids over to them every day, we're going to lose them. And so what you have to do is become the primary educator of your kid. And at the very least, if you can't homeschool your kids or you can't send your kids to a well-examined private school, then you can spend some time every evening trying to counter what the kids are learning. My first advice is get out of those schools, number one. My first advice would be homeschool. My second advice would be find a stable and well-examined by you private school that's going to allow you to know that your kid's getting a stable education. And if you can't even do those things, then quite frankly, I think most of us can do those things.
Well, you know, today it's much easier because of the technology. I don't have to be a PhD in 25 disciplines to be able to sign my children up to your program.
Absolutely. Never has there been more good stuff online that you can use to educate a kid. And if you can't homeschool or private school them, then at least take an hour every night and sit down with your kids over the dinner table and say, look, tell me what you learned today about history. Tell me what you learned today about economics. Tell me what your teacher said about the founding fathers today. Mm-hmm. If you do that, you are going to be horrified by what your kids tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Take a little time and show them. Hop online and say, okay, all you've heard about the founding fathers is that they were racist slaveholders. Well, let's take a look at what they actually said. Look at some of the quotes. Let's take a look at their lives. What were they fighting against? You've got to find a way to balance. If you're going to leave them in these public schools, ask them how they're doing their math problems. When they show you the ridiculous, counterintuitive ways they're working math problems, show them how to do it more simply. Give them a fighting chance.
Now, one of the things, I think this a recent project that you folks are involved in is getting churches that are only open, most churches, I should say, most of the conservative, Bible-believing churches, they're open Wednesday nights for a sermon, and then they're open Sunday mornings for a few hours. The rest of the week, with precious few exceptions, they're shuttered. But you have a way that you can actually turn these churches into schools. And how can you do that without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Yeah, it's our partnership program, and you do have churches, beautiful churches all across this country that are only busy a couple days a week. What if we were able to help those churches become private schools? Most churches won't, because it takes a lot of money and a lot of insurance and a lot of indemnification to be able to hire teachers, to be able to pay teacher salaries, vacation, retirement, and it's cost inefficient. What if we eliminate the need for actual teachers? What if we bring live schooling through computer screens into the church reception room, right, where they have the big ballroom or the reception room, the church basement? What if we have mom and dads drop their kids off at church instead of the public schools? And what if we provide the education and a youth minister or a pastor or a couple mom volunteers make sure the kids are getting an education in a Christian setting? Because you know what? Then you can pray. If you're getting your kids are getting a first-rate education in a church. They can also incorporate prayer into that. They can do Bible study with that as well. So it's really the best possible world. It's a way to make better use of church property and to reinvest education with a sense of God. That's what the founding fathers wanted. That's what they learned that way. What if we went back to that model? It would be pretty easy, I think, to reverse a lot of this garbage with that kind of a winning strategy.
In the few minutes we have left, what type of courses do you offer?
We offer all the traditional courses. We are a classical school, which means we offer all the classical education. We're also Christian, so we teach.
And when you say Christian, you're sort of Christ-centered but not denominationally
centered.
We are
non-denominational. We would be hypocrites to help parents teach their kids their own ways and then teach our philosophy or theology. Mm-hmm. So we are a biblical-based, Christ-centered school. But the theology and the dogma, that's mom and dad's job.
So a Catholic would be comfortable, Protestant, a Baptist, whatever would be comfortable.
Yes, sir. Yeah. We've got members of the Latter-day Saints. We've got Mormons in our school. We've got Roman Catholics, Orthodox Roman Catholics. We've got Jewish kids in our school. Because we're a Judeo-Christian school. We've got Jewish kids in our school. We've got Methodists and Lutherans and Baptists. And, you know, I'm proud to say, Hal, in the almost 10 years we've been doing this now, I have never had a parent, not one time, have I had a parent call me and say, "Hey, we're Methodists, and your school's pushing Catholicism," or mm-hmm. "We're Catholics, and your school's pushing Lutheranism." Never happened.
That's great. So you have math, science, logic. You actually teach
logic? Yep. And economics.
Don't you have a course in emotionalism? How you feel about things, you know?
Yeah, the first tenet of our logic course is that your feelings don't matter.
And isn't logic the science of right thinking? Isn't that what the definition?
I thought logic was basically just like using your brain.
Using
common
your brain.
Yeah, used to be called thinking, right?
A rarity nowadays.
So now with the millions of listeners, I know a lot of them would be interested in contacting you, Freedom Project Education. How can they do that?
FPEUSA.org, Freedom Project Education, FPEUSA.org will get you to our website. All the contact information is there. And if you're interested in the Dr. Duke Show, if you like what you heard today and want to hear these opinions applied to modern stories in education, type in thedrdukeshow.com or go to your podcast places like iTunes. You'll find it there. It's free to download. And pay attention to what we're saying. I think we're going to give you, as many people have pointed out, and I know you know this is true, Hal, as goes education in this country, so goes the future. Lincoln was right. Lincoln said that the philosophy of the classroom in just one generation becomes the philosophy of government in the next, and we're paying attention to all these elections and politics and all this other stuff while generations of our kids are getting educated in anti-American ways in the public schools.
Well, Duke, thank you so much for coming on the show on such short notice. And listeners who are listening to the station, please, or on Facebook or on YouTube, wherever else, please get a hold of Duke and his organization. Thank you very much, Duke. We'll catch up to you soon.